The injustice of this outraged us. And I remember we had a conversation where we said, someone's got to change this. It's terrible. And then, of course, when you say things like that, you're inevitably hit with the thing, well, wait a sec, we qualify. Back in that time, our movement was fighting just for the right to not be thrown into jail for being gay. Relationships wasn't even on the agenda. The letter said that the petition for me to stay here as the spouse of a U.S. citizen had been turned down because, quote, you have failed to establish that a bona fide marital relationship can exist between two faggots.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Serving in silence ends for U.S. transgender military personnel. Tear gas and rubber bullets shut down defiant Istanbul expressions of pride. And love wins late for a limited partnership. Those stories and more this week because you've chosen This Way Out.
I'm Michael LeBeau.
And I'm Jessica Andrea.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBT communities around the world for the 2 weeks ending June 25th, 2016. The U.S. Defense Department will lift its ban on service by transgender personnel on July 1st. A Pentagon official told USA Today that each branch of the armed services will be directed over a one-year period to implement new policies on recruiting, housing, and uniforms for transgender troops. The announcement comes a year after Secretary of Defense Ash Carter said that he'd initiated a study into how to best integrate transgender military personnel. Not surprisingly, this week's announcement drew immediate praise from LGBT activists. Matt Thorne, executive director of the military rights group Outserve SLDN, said in a press release that lifting the ban will have given a breath of relief and overdue respect to transgender service members who have been and are currently serving our country with undeniable professionalism, the utmost respect, and illustrious courage, with the caveat to do so silently. Today we mark history once again by ending the need to serve in silence.
It's been 5 years since Don't Ask, Don't Tell was repealed, allowing gay and lesbian personnel to serve openly. According to a June 24th story in the Navy Times, officials with that service branch are urging the thousands of sailors and Marines kicked out because of their sexual orientation to appeal their discharges to the Board of Correction of Naval Records. And what the paper called a step to restore benefits and right historical wrong, it's not yet clear if other branches of the U.S. military will follow suit.
Italy's highest court made it a little easier this week for gays and lesbians to adopt a partner's biological child. It upheld a lower court ruling allowing a so-called stepchild adoption because the family bond was well established. However, while calling the ruling a step forward, the LGBT rights group Familia Arcobaleno, Rainbow Families, said it falls short of having immediate recognition at birth of both parents in same-gender civil unions, which were open to lesbian and gay couples earlier this year. That bill passed in Parliament despite strong opposition from the country's politically powerful Roman Catholic Church, only after a provision to allow same-gender couples to adopt was dropped. Passage nevertheless ended Italy's reign as the last holdout in Western Europe to legally recognize gay and lesbian couples.
Reacting to the UK vote this week to leave the European Union, LGBT rights advocates across the continent have generally expressed concerns that the absence of Britain's strong pro-LGBT voice will take some pressure off recalcitrant EU member states to advance equality. Marriage champion Prime Minister David Cameron has already announced his resignation. The government of Iran and Russia's Vladimir Putin were joined in applauding Britain's exit from the EU by U.S. Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump.
One of Kenya's regional high courts has legalized anal probes to check for proof that a suspect is gay. The barbaric practice has been thoroughly discredited by medical professionals around the world as scientifically worthless. Human rights groups call anal probes a violation of international treaties against torture. Private consensual adult gay sex is illegal in the East African nation and punishable by up to 14 years in prison. Two men challenged the constitutionality of the procedure after they were forced by police to undergo the probes to determine if they'd had sex. Mombasa High Court Judge Matthew Emekule dismissed the case on June 16th, concluding that There was no other way evidence could have been obtained. According to local activist Eric Gattari, Emekule's decision included a long rant about how food is processed by the human body, that the mouth and the anus are not sexual organs, and compared sodomists to dogs. The homosexuality trial of the two men is ongoing. Their lawyer says they'll appeal this week's anal probe ruling.
Elsewhere, voters in the self-governing British Overseas Territory of Bermuda have dealt a setback to supporters of same-gender couples, rejecting by a more than 2-to-1 margin both marriage equality and civil unions for lesbian and gay couples. The June 23rd non-binding referendum asks voters to decide each question separately. Out of some 65,000 residents, about 44,000 Bermudians were registered to vote in the referendum. However, the two questions are only considered to have been answered with a minimum voter turnout of at least 50%. It's not clear, in the latest reports by Bermuda's Royal Gazette newspaper, if that threshold was reached. But Premier Michael Dunkley insisted earlier in the week that any outcome is the will of the people and will guide their elected officials accordingly.
In other news, thousands of LGBT people and their allies marched through central Seoul on June 11th in the South Korean capital's annual Pride Parade. The online news portal Asia One reported that about 2,000 police officers were deployed along the parade route to separate marchers from hundreds of fundamentalist Christians protesting the event. Chanting slogans and holding signs, one reading in English that, "Homosexual is sin, return to Jesus." Undaunted, an estimated 5,000 people marched in the parade, waving rainbow flags and dancing along the route to music being blared from several sound trucks.
Some 6,000 police officers guarded an estimated 1,500 LGBT rights activists and their supporters in what was called an equality march in Kyiv on June 12th. The procession in Ukraine's capital city only went a couple of blocks, but participants blew soap bubbles along the way, played drums, and chanted, "Human rights is our pride," and "No to violence, yes to rights." There were serious safety concerns leading up to the march because right-wing, ultra-nationalist groups had once again threatened violent disruptions. A number of them broke through police lines at last year's event and threw smoke grenades and firecrackers at the participants. Two police officers were injured. There were also homophobic protesters chanting, "Death to fags," this year. But the march and rally remained peaceful, and aside from some hoarse voices, there were no injuries. 57 people were reportedly detained by police for behaving aggressively.
But it was police officers in Istanbul behaving aggressively when they broke up a disallowed pride march in the Turkish capital on June 19th. The event was specifically devoted to the T's in LGBT and was a prelude to the main march scheduled for June 26th. City officials banned both events earlier in the week, citing security concerns following the Pulse massacre in Orlando, Florida. Reuters reported that three suspected Islamic State militants were arrested in Istanbul after an anonymous tip said that they were planning to attack that trans pride march on the 19th. But Turkish police arguably did more real damage. They used water cannons, tear gas, and rubber bullets to disperse dozens of defiant trans activists and their allies who'd taken to the streets without permission to unfurl a large rainbow flag. Some 300 officers in riot gear attacked the activists, some of whom told the online BuzzFeed news site that they'd simply gathered in front of the Istanbul Pride office to read a media statement and had no plan to march anywhere. They'd already been threatened by ultranationalists and fundamentalist Islamic protesters who'd gathered nearby before the police arrived and began the assault. Organizers had said they'd expected up to 100,000 people to attend the largest LGBT pride parade in the Islamic world in Istanbul on June 26th. After 13 consecutive years of relatively peaceful marches, organizers themselves called it off this year, citing genuine security concerns.
But finally, New York has already declared the site a historic city landmark, and LGBT people and their allies can now take pride in the U.S. movement's first ever national monument. President Barack Obama made official on June 24th what we first reported several weeks ago. His announcement from the White House comes, appropriately enough, during this month's traditional U.S. Pride celebrations.
Back in 1969, as a turbulent decade was winding down, the Stonewall Inn was a popular gathering place for New York City's LGBT community. At the time, being gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender was considered obscene, illegal, even a mental illness. One night, police raided the bar and started arresting folks. Raids like these were nothing new, but this time the patrons had had enough. So they stood up and spoke out. The riots became protests. The protests became a movement. The movement ultimately became an integral part of America. So this week, I'm designating the Stonewall National Monument as the newest addition to America's national park system. Stonewall will be our first national monument to tell the story of the struggle for LGBT rights. I believe our national park should reflect the full story of our country, the richness and diversity and uniquely American spirit that has always defined us, that we are stronger together, that out of many, we are one.
That was U.S. President Barack Obama.
And that's News Wrap for the 2 weeks ending June 25th, 2016. Produced by Steve Pride, written by Greg Gordon, and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Jessica Andrea.
And I'm Michael LeBeau.
In a late-breaking update from Istanbul, Turkish authorities aggressively cracked down on a second expression of pride on June 26th. German Green Party European MP Terry Reinke and well-known activist Volker Beck were among some 19 people detained when police dispersed a press conference with tear gas and rubber bullets. It was attempted in lieu of Istanbul's annual Pride Parade, which organizers had already canceled due to safety concerns. Sing along as Broadway serenades Orlando later in the program.
How the world can change, it can change like that, due to one little word, married. See a palace rise from a two-roomed flat, due to one little word, married. That was often there, suddenly ceases to be. For you wake one day, look around and say, my lovely boyfriend, or if I were a lesbian, my girlfriend. But I'm not, so my boyfriend,
before the world changed, the word married and an infamous insult from the U.S. government set the stage for an enduring gay love story. Here's This Way Out's Steve Pride.
In the mid-1970s, Richard Adams and his husband, Tony Sullivan, filed the first federal lawsuit seeking equal treatment for a same-sex marriage in U.S. history.
I'm Cleta Rorix, former county clerk from Boulder County, Boulder, Colorado.
And I'm Anthony Sullivan, the surviving spouse of Richard Adams.
I'm Tom Miller. I'm the producer and director of Limited Partnership, a 40-year love story of Richard Adams and Tony Sullivan, who met in the early 70s and got legally married in Boulder, Colorado in 1975. But one of the interesting things is that Tony was from Australia, and so they used that marriage license to have Tony apply for a green card.
This 40-year saga began in the Boulder County Clerk's office.
In March of 75, I had two guys come to my office asking for a marriage license. They were both from Colorado Springs. And I spoke to our district attorney and got a legal opinion on whether our Colorado marriage code would prohibit giving them a license. At the time, it did not. It was not addressed as an issue in the Colorado marriage code that a marriage had to be between a man and a woman. So he left it up to me to make the decision. And I decided that I was going to give them a marriage license. And I subsequently went on to issue five more licenses, one of them being for Tony and Richard. I had never really knowingly met anyone who was gay or lesbian. I felt like it was the right thing to do. I was kind of a budding feminist, and we were fighting for our own rights. Our paths at that time didn't cross yet with the gay rights movement. The women's movement did not. So all hell broke loose in many areas of the country. I received a lot of hate mail from entire church congregations telling me I was creating a Sodom and Gomorrah. The local paper editorialized against me, telling me I was going to lower the property value of Boulder since all these gay people are going to flock to town to live. Later, Colorado went on to revise the marriage code, but they didn't negate those 6 marriage licenses. And just as Tony and Richard did, I feel that that marriage license that they have is a valid marriage license.
Tony, how did you and Richard end up in Clela's office?
We had realized that we wanted to be together. And the immigration law at the time was that gay people weren't even allowed into the country as tourists, that if you'd been naturalized, you could be stripped of your citizenship and deported, and you couldn't apply for a green card. And the injustice of this, before we really realized how it affected us, outraged us. And I remember we had a conversation where we said, someone's got to change this, it's terrible. And then, of course, when you say things like that, you're inevitably hit with the thing, well, wait a sec, we qualify for that. But we, same token, said, wait a sec, let's back off. And we made a decision to wait 6 months before we decide that we would take a stand. And in that 6 months, of course, the realization that we did not want to be separated, which was the main thing, sunk in deeper and deeper. And at the end of 6 months, we decided that we would take a stand. And we went to Troy Perry, who had the Metropolitan Community Church, who was performing what was known as Holy Unions. He's been left out of the history a bit, and it's wrong, because before Stonewall, he was talking about gay relationships. People need to remember that back in that time, our movement was fighting just for the right to not be thrown into jail for being gay. Relationships wasn't even on the agenda. So we went to Troy and approached him and said that we wanted to get a holy union and go to the courts on the grounds of freedom of religion, like the Native Americans did with peyote. And so we had the holy union, we were planning what to do, and then suddenly we read in The Advocate, the gay publication, about the marriages in Boulder, Colorado. And we thought, well, if Colorado has allowed this to go on this length of time when it's receiving high publicity, this must be for real. So in good faith, we flew to Boulder, Colorado, went to Clela's office, got issued a marriage license. We were so nervous about the law possibly changing, we took our own ministers with us to getting the license and got the actually married in the courthouse corridor outside Clela's office and took the license straight back in so that there'd be no chance of it not being received.
After the marriage, you applied for citizenship as Richard's spouse. How did the U.S. government respond?
The letter was delivered on a Saturday morning, and the post person, when I opened it, was still there. We had to sign for it. And I read it, and I thought, no, this can't be real. And so I showed it to the post person and said, does this say what I think it says? He looked at it and just gave a silent nod. So I gave it to Richard. And I suppose I was a little unkind when he'd read it. I turned around and said, it's your government. The letter said that the petition for me to stay here as the spouse of a U.S. citizen had been turned down because, quote, you have failed to establish that a bona fide marital relationship can exist between two faggots, close quote.
Richard and Tony's battle to stay together led them to flee the U.S., and as Richard was not allowed immigration to Tony's homeland due to an antiquated law in Australia, the couple found themselves without a country, floating around Europe, eventually sneaking back home across the U.S. border with Mexico. Their complex and moving story is beautifully recounted in the documentary Limited Partnership. Find more information about the film online at limitedpartnershipmovie.com. I'm Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
Shortly before he died in December of 2012, Richard Adams told Tony Sullivan that they had won in the end because they had not been separated. They finally won in legal terms earlier this year. Troy Masters is the Los Angeles reporter who broke the story. He updated This Way Out's Abby Dees and Wenzel Jones.
Anthony Sullivan, after fighting for 41 years to have what he believed all along was a valid license that was issued to him by the county clerk in Boulder, Colorado, his marriage certificate was honored by the federal government. Now, the oldest existent gay marriage in the world.
Is this more a symbolic thing, or are there any actual legal ramifications since the husband has passed on?
Well, there are legal ramifications because he is entitled to benefits, including Social Security. His citizenship, of course, is a benefit of their marriage. So he's now a permanent resident. He can apply, and I think it's 5 years to become a citizen, and that's pretty automatic. But he is entitled to all the privileges and benefits of any surviving spouse.
Have you talked to him since this happened?
Oh, yeah, many times.
And how is he doing?
He's enthusiastic. You know, initially, I think he was, like, very high about it. He didn't talk about it. The note came in March, and we're just now sort of, like, getting it out there in the public sphere. So I think it was a great relief, which then led sort of to a depression, which normally happens, to know that you've fought so hard to get something that you are now going to enjoy post-relationship because of Richard's death. So that leads to depression, and also just having the thing that you fight for being resolved. You know, I think that also leads to a little bit of it. But we worked hard to make sure he's been honored. And aside from the article, he's gotten a lot of attention. The West Hollywood City Council honored him at the opening of the Pride celebration. So the mayor's party, the first party that they throw for Pride, was about honoring Anthony, which was really wonderful. They gave him a proclamation. He was there to receive it with the first relative who's ever visited him since his 41 years. As many people might know, he was alienated from his family, and they believed him to be dead until his niece started reading the stories. And she came from Australia to visit him. So she was with him for the Pride celebration.
Do you know if he has any plans of doing anything untoward with that letter from the government denying him his marriage? Like maybe a ceremonial burning of it? Or
I think it's like it's a piece of history. I hope he doesn't burn. Now it's a treasure. Like if you had that framed side by side with the letter of apology later from USCIS, U.S. Citizenship and Immigration, that's just an amazing document.
That was reporter Troy Masters with our Wenzel Jones and Abby Dees. And finally this week, a chorus of big names sends Orlando some love from Broadway.
What the world needs now is love, sweet love. It's the only thing that there's just too little love. What the world needs now is love. Just for some, but for everyone.
Lord, we don't need another mountain. There are mountains and hillsides enough to climb.
There are oceans and rivers
enough to cross,
enough to last,
enough to last
till the end of time.
To grow.
There are sunbeams and moonbeams enough to shine.
Oh, listen, Lord,
If you wanna know.
If you wanna know.
Kristen Bell, Wayne Brady, Matthew Broderick, Sarah Jessica Parker, B.D. Wong, Whoopi Goldberg, Joel Gray, Bernadette Peters, Sean Hayes, Rosie Perez, Lin-Manuel Miranda, and Carol King were just some of the Broadway stars singing Burt Bacharach's What the World Needs Now is Love. Now that you've sung along, you should download it. The proceeds will go to the LGBT Center of Central Florida, which is helping the victims and survivors of the Pulse Massacre. It's available on iTunes or at broadwayrecords.com/broadway-4FOR-Orlando. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. This week, Michael LeBeau, Jessica Andrea, Steve Pride, and Abby Dees and Wenzel Jones contributed program material. Broadway for Orlando and Alan Cumming performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Yavanna Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, our contributing affiliate stations, and you, our listener supporters, for making this program possible. Check out Now Playing information, pics of the crew, and a lot more at thiswayout.org. Email tworadio@aol.com or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078 USA. For Associate Producer Arusha Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening online at thiswayout.org and on KMUN Astoria, Oregon, to B.O.B. Taree, New South Wales, WBAI, New York, New York, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.